So today we get the second instance where Jesus sends out his disciples on mission. The first time is when he sends the 12, and then afterwards he sends out 70 disciples with similar instructions, but his ministry in a sense is branching out, so he sends out more people to all the different places in which he intends to go. And so you can get a glimpse in terms of how Jesus sees in his own mind his ministry when he starts telling his disciples what they should emphasize in how they travel and how they work and how they take care of people. And one of the ways in which I found this to be really profound, and one of his teachings that I personally am very happy to obey, is eat whatever they put in front of you. But you notice he says it twice. He says, eat whatever they put in front of you twice. You know, and it has a very interesting meaning to it, because it's not just, like, it seems really simple. But it's not. Getting around the dinner table, entering into somebody's home, eating the food that they make, uncritically, uncomplaining, with openness, with generosity, is a symbolic thing. Because what you're saying is I don't just accept your food, I accept you. And one of the most beautiful things about the Canadian Christian experience is that priests take this to a whole new level. You know, like, if you're a priest in Ireland, yeah, okay, I don't know what Irish people eat. That was a bad example. But imagine, you know, you're an English priest, and you're English eating English food, you might have to deal with the occasional immigrant style of food. But when you're in Canada, man, I looked in my fridge this week from all the different leftovers, etc., from parties or receptions that I've been to all week. It's basically a cornucopia of Southeast Asia with a little bit of Italy and a tiny bit of France, and then, of course, the North American staples of sausage and hamburgers, etc. It was an unbelievable reflection just looking at my fridge, because I said, all of these people are in this one church. But even more interestingly is when you enter into the life of somebody and you enter into their food, one of the other things that you also enter into is, even if they give you their best, it becomes abundantly clear sometimes maybe their own poverty. So when I'm talking about English food, everybody knows about the poverty of English food. Boil everything. But I don't mean just that. I don't mean the taste of it. Because sometimes some of the best foods you ever eat are a result of a culture's poverty. Sometimes a culture that saturates their food in spices is because it's hard to preserve food. It's a dangerous game keeping the meat laying around for so long. So you throw some spice on it. You got to protect it. But one of the ways in which this is also very poignant for me is the great ways in which this is also patterned out in all the other things that Jesus says. Don't move about from house to house. Stay committed to people. Stay committed in their land, and don't move around as if you're just going around for money and then you move around from place to place. Another document, a second century document called the Didache, this is an early Christian document, and it gives a very explicit instruction to not really trust prophets who go from town to town, because the problem with those guys is eventually it's really easy, if you're always moving, to hide your cheating, to hide the lies, to hide your frauds, etc. So always be more willing to trust a prophet who's consistent. But he says other things as well. Be at peace when you proclaim the gospel to them. When you offer them the gospel, if they reject it, walk away. Now, of course, he also says, shake off the dust from your feet in protest. But what he's also saying to them is, you know, don't take it too personally if people reject what you have to say. Remember the Samaritan village we just encountered, was it last week or the week before? That if you walk into a village and they hate you, it might just because for cultural reasons. So let it go. Move on with yourself. Get over yourself. The gospel's more important than us, because the gospel is life itself. Our religious life is not appendage, is not an appendage to who we are. It is the very life that animates us, that strengthens us, from which we live and move and have our being. And in my homily last night, I wound up trying to explain how this worked theoretically for a good amount of time. And then I realized that this past week was Canada Day. And there's a whole bunch of Canadian saints. I listed only a handful on this little card just before Mass happened. Because all of these people symbolize what this means for us. Saint François de Laval comes to Canada in the 17th century. He comes to New France. He founds the first diocese in Quebec. North of Mexico, it's the first diocese in the United States and in Canada. And he establishes this foreign mission. And in doing so, he not only helps establish education and the faith with all of the people that are there, but he establishes a pattern for the gospel. Maria of the Incarnation does the exact same thing by teaching young women how to be able to have an education, to be able to find a purpose in this new world. Marguerite de Youville, she's the foundress of the Grey Nuns, but the Grey Nuns title, that was not a title of honor. It was a title of mockery and scorn. Because soon after her husband died, not exactly a beautiful man by any moral stretch of the word, he dies and then she decides that what she's going to do with the latter portion of her life is to take care of disadvantaged women. And of course, because she starts doing this, the scorn that falls on these women falls on her and her community. But rather than, you know, writing to Parliament about how badly she's being treated, rather than complaining to the larger world about how unjust her treatment happens to be, they wear the scorn as a badge of honor. They wear the scorn as a solidarity with the very women that society then had scorned. They're still called Grey Nuns to this day. I'm just going to go down the list again. Saint Kateri Tekakwitha, Mohawk Algonquin woman, converted to Christianity when she was around 18, died in her mid-20s, rejected by her family and by her friends for her new choice of faith, and yet laid a witness and a foundation not only of moral and spiritual purity, but of joy, eventually called the Lily of the Mohawks. Saint André Bessette died in 1937. He healed people because he himself knew the pain of being sick. He grew up as an orphan. His family had died, his parents died gradually throughout his youth, and he had to take care of his brothers and sisters, and of course he himself was always sick. And so then when he eventually tries to become a brother, even the brothers, the Congregation of the Holy Cross, try to kick him to the curb. And his witness of faith, of fidelity, of constancy, is the very reason that so many people flocked to Montreal so that they would be able to catch a glimpse of this holy man. If you ever go to Montreal and you see St. Joseph's Oratory, that is one of his legacies. But the greatest legacy are all the crutches that hang on the wall of this particular basilica, of all the people that have gone there looking for care, looking for mercy, and found that kind of healing. And even when he was offering these healings, of course, his brothers in the community hated him for it. They thought he was a charlatan. And it wasn't just the brothers in the community, it was priests of the diocese and all these other people. They treated him like dirt. And he loved anyway. The whole mission that Jesus gives his disciples is, in a sense, to leave home, to enter into the lives of other people. The whole element of Christian life is to go out from where we think we belong, to enter into a new world where God is beginning to transform our very nature according to his pattern. Christianity is not something where we lower our head and look at our navels. It's where we look out to the world and we begin to see the necessities of the poor, the necessities of those who are sick. And that is precisely what Jesus sends his disciples out to do. Take care of the sick, proclaim the gospel, and set people free from the powers of the air, the demons, the spirits. And you might think that that is not an important thing today, but it is. We have fantastic health care in Canada, but a lot of people are lonely. That's where they're sick. We have many, many blessings. Very few people starve. But many more people do not have an adequate amount of time to spend with their families. Parents that are isolated and alone, that are having to take care of their kids all by themselves without a community to call them home. They have the food in the fridge, but they don't have the family to make it joyful. And tragically, we also have a world that is almost now obtuse to the people who are living in it. How many of us, when we look inside the real estate market, or when we have to deal with a lawyer, or when we have to deal with all of the complexities of the world, or heck, just going to the mechanic to try to get your car fixed, how often do we feel as if this world has grown well beyond manageable constraints? That we are somehow treated as pawns inside this massive machinery of control. We let go of it as the apostles and the saints have done before, by fundamentally grounding our hearts, not in this world, but in the next, of knowing what our purpose is. But the reason why I wanted to bring up these saints is precisely because if I were to say to you, focus on the next world, your next thought would be, well, then what would happen to this one? Well, very fortunately, it is their witness that made education possible. It is their witness that made healthcare in our country possible. It is their witness that made our country more focused on justice and truth and not on the whims of the powerful. And it's as our country has produced fewer and fewer saints, we have gotten under the control of money and power and corruption. For the love of this country, for the love of the faith that we profess, we can have a renewal. We can go off in mission and proclaim the gospel, not for our own benefit, but for the benefit of others, and gradually find a brand new vivacity. We can truly come back and be able to say, look, Lord, see the amazing things we have done for your name. And for the sake of humility and for the sake of truth, Jesus will give us the same rebuke, happy rebuke, but rebuke nonetheless, that he gave to his disciples when they returned. Don't think the most important thing is having the powers of the air and the powers of injustice bow before you. Rejoice that your names are written in heaven. Sounds pretty sweet to me. Because now I don't have to be bitter about my future. My future is assured. Now I'm going to fight for my present.